You know, the roster is going to change, and that's part of the business that we're in. Want to make those transactions as respectful as possible, but that's part of the game, and that's kind of the life we've chosen. So there'll be some conversations that we'll have with players over the next few days, and we will keep those obviously very respectful, and hopefully some of those guys can either end up back on our team or, you know, on somebody else's.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens here in our Verizon-powered WEEI studios on NFL Cutdown Day. You just heard it, Mike Vrabel. Talking about what, you know, a lot of coaches say is one of the worst days of the year. You work with 30 or 40 guys for months and months. They work hard. They do their best. Their best isn't good enough. You need to tell them they're not good enough for your football team. NFL Cutdown Day. Patriots and all 32 teams by 4 o'clock need to get down to the 53-man roster limit. But Fitzy, we always like to warn people, it is not the final roster. It's not even the opening day roster. All it is the roster they're going to submit at 4 o'clock today to the league before they go through waiver claims, more trades, adjustments, practice squads, all these things. But a lot of names flying about, Fitzy, and you and I were like-minded. We were like, you know what we need today? We need a Dan Ball update desk. So we need to give a little sneak preview of what you're going to hear if we have cuts, notes, trades, big cuts, big names from around the league. This is what you'll hear.
We want to continue to strengthen the roster.
I'll give you my crap and you give me your best player.
So if you hear that, that could be a trade. It could be a cut for the Patriots. Could be a cut across the league. For example, I've already looked, Fitzy. Deontay Johnson released by the Browns. Mecole Hardman.
Man, he's
cut
such
by
a good
pack.
Guy.
He is not. Talent is there. The rest of the total package, not so much.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky's chin would like to weigh in on that.
So Fitzy, let me run through just a quick list of the names that have already hit the wire through reports from the various beat guys.
Just give me a second. I'm still getting over John Giles and Truman Jones.
Yeah, Truman Jones. Yeah, the Truman Show. Wasn't much of a show, apparently. So released today, according to various reports, DeMontre Jacobs, who was a starting lineman for them at times last year, cornerback Miles Battle, kicker Parker Romo, he cut the John, and then they cut him. Corner Brandon Crossley, never said that name before in my life. Receiver John Giles Band, safety Marcus Epps, who reportedly asked for and was granted his release. Defensive tackle David Olajiga. He's a pathway program guy. They could have an extra spot on the practice squad if they want to keep him around. Lineman Mekhi Butler, center Alec Lindstrom, linebacker Cam Riley, running back Jermichael Hasty, defensive end, as you said, Truman Jones. I think the most notable one there for me, Fitzy, that actually leads to an interesting discussion is the kicking situation, where the veteran, who I think most people believed, quote unquote, won the job or had the better summer, Parker Romo was let go, and Andy Borogalis was kept as a draft pick.
Oh, not according to Twitter, because I posted as much this morning, and I was called a lot of words I can't repeat on the airwaves of WEEI.
For what? For saying Parker Romo won the job?
That he was the better kicker this summer? Yeah, no, Andy, listen, I just want to tell everybody, people like yourself, myself, the Phil Perrys, Mark Daniels, etc., we were not on the hill watching the kickers. We were not witness. Like Tom Curran, who weighed in about rookie kickers and the difficulties of putting them on your team several weeks ago, watching Andy Borogalis miss a kick so badly, it actually went, I think, onto the second practice field. He also missed several kicks in games, in the actual pretend season games as well. Parker Romo was steadier and better, but he had no draft capital invested in him and is not under contractual control for 4 years. Thus, he was cut. But we are the idiots. Back to you.
Idiot number one here says, I think this is interesting because it gives you a little insight into the team and what they are prioritizing. We'll get into potential cuts later. Ted and I talked on Friday about Kyle Duggar and what happens with him. Could be some insight into who is making final decisions, whether money matters more than 53-man talent on the roster, best available talent. And this kicker situation, It's an issue as old as time in football. you know, if you're on scholarship or you're a rookie, you are going, I mean, a draft pick, you're going to get more chances. It's just the reality. The team is literally and figuratively invested in you, more invested in you. But I said it yesterday. We may have had the first walk it back Monday with Mike Vrabel, which harkened back to the Mayo days of a year gone by. Does this kicker competition that Mike Reese said was never a competition in the eyes of the Brain Trust, the fact that the job was just given to Borregales, this feels like a Mayo-like misstep. You're trying to create a culture built on it's not how you got here, it's what you do once you're here kind of mentality, the old school rah-rah. The guy who everybody seemed to think won the job is now out of work, and the guy who was riding his draft status has the job. Does that not feel a little strange for the hard-o Mike Vrabel culture that he's trying to instill?
It does, especially when Ben Volen, Mike Reese tweets about it and didn't feel like it was a true competition. This feels, in a lot of ways, Andy, like last year, the quarterback competition, except the veteran was given the job because the rookie definitely outplayed him, but that was not part of the upper office, Robin Glazier, whoever's plans. And so this year, you have Ben Volen calling it a sham competition. This was a great tweet from earlier, at Borish_sports. What's the worst case week two scenario for the Pats? Borregales misses the game winner, or Parker Romo drills the Dolphins game winner in Miami? Because you know now that who's their kicker? Jason Sanders is out for at least 5 weeks. Guarantee you he'll go down there as well. It's a strange, it sends a very strange message. Like, we got to go with the potential of this kid. Like, he'd probably sneak through to, he'd probably be able to sneak through to waivers, and you hold on to him as well, and you go with the veteran who seems a steadier leg for the first year, setting the culture for Vrabel. I'm confused like you, guy.
All right, we have our first opportunity to overuse our sounder. We've got a nugget from Cutdown Day.
We want to continue to strengthen the roster.
I'll give you my crap, and you give me your best player.
Dan Ball, Cutdown Desk, what do we have?
What do we have, Andy?
Oh, are you not the guy that's typing, Texans are releasing fullback Jakob Johnson?
Didn't know you wanted me to break in with that information. Yes, he has been released.
See, when I play the sounder, it means the relevant new information comes out of your mouth, and boom, we elevate your status as the update desk guy, because Jakob Johnson was a fullback for
the New England Patriots.
But also after that, he was a fullback for
the Houston Texans.
Son of a bitch. Las Vegas Raiders.
The Raiders, who were coached by Josh McDaniels, who now runs the Patriots offense, and the Patriots currently don't have a fullback. So it makes perfect sense that Jakob Johnson is a name to watch, because as much as I love fullbacks, it does feel like Josh McDaniels might love fullbacks even more than I do. We also have another nugget, no sounder necessary, because that one went so well, we'll just let it kind of simmer for a little while and percolate. The Texans, Cam Robinson, their left tackle, is apparently available via trade. Fitzy, do we want Cam Robinson?
As a swing tackle?
Yes. As an anything tackle. I think it could be your starting tackle. Like, people presume
over
that.
Over who?
Morgan Moses stunk all summer, barely played, could barely find his way onto the
field. I've seen enough of him to levy a verdict or to weigh in. Like, I haven't seen him at all out there. Like, legit haven't seen him at
Correct.
All.
Well, when he was out there, Harold Landry was making him his prison you-know-what. And therefore, Cam Robinson, who I don't think is good. I'm not saying Cam Robinson is good. I'm just saying there is a borderline starting caliber veteran tackle body that might be available on the trade market. I think the Patriots should be interested. I mean, for example, he's played in the league more recently than Lyle Collins, who everybody was like, hey, Lyle Collins. And I said yes to that. If you say
he's also played more than Marcus Bryant, who is likely to make the team. And he's also not named Vidarian Lowe.
And see, everybody hates on Lowe. I don't hate
on Lowe. He's fine as a swing tackle.
If Lowe has to play, it is what it is. Like, you didn't do a great job upping the talent on the depth chart.
I've also heard he's maybe the nicest guy in the Patriots locker room.
He is very
nice. Not that counts on Sundays.
Nice guys finish last in pass protection. That's an old football cliche, I think. That's why Will Campbell should be an upgrade, because he's ready to kill somebody out on the football field. But Cam Robinson, I absolutely would consider it. Now, you also need to remember that Nick Caserio, and I'm not going to ask Dan Ball these questions because it didn't go well when I tried to play the connections game with Dan Ball moments ago. Obviously, Nick Caserio, formerly of the New England organization, Mike Vrabel, formerly of the Houston organization. There are some cross-pollination ties still existing, even with Belichick gone. Maybe that's an opportunity. Could you trade? I don't know, Anfernee Jennings. Would they like a gently used Anfernee Jennings for Cam Robinson? Can we swap guys that don't fit anymore?
Might I interest you in this gently used Anfernee Jennings for your overworked Cam Robinson? I mean, that guy has bounced around a lot. Jacksonville, Minnesota, Houston. Like,
yeah.
There are enough teams that have kicked him to the curb and put him out in the Alston Christmas of football that you got to begin to wonder now, like, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
No question. I don't think he's a great player. Like, his career is circling the drains. We don't actually have to do that read today, but Cam Robinson's career is circling the drains. But also, I would say, the Patriots are league leaders in questions on the offensive line. So anybody that becomes available as an offensive lineman, almost anybody, because we did get a couple texts. What about old friend Trent Brown? No, I do not want to go down the Trent Brown road again. He was, I believe, already released by Houston. So clearly they've done a decent job of stockpiling some tackle talent. But that's an example of some of the things you're going to have to look for, Fitzy. You're not going to get I think some people have this dream of, you know, some guy, Brian Waters. Remember when Brian Waters came here for 1 year and slid right in as like a Pro Bowl guard?
Yeah, kicked ass and then went back to Houston on a big payday. But it was a miracle that somebody of his caliber found his way to the Pats.
You ain't getting that. You're getting the Alston Christmas. You're like, this bed only has three legs, but if we also find two bricks, it'll be level. That's what you're getting at the tackle position.
And if
right
we can
now
just take the bed bugs out of it and not imagine that cockroaches used to live in it. Let me throw a name by it. Let's play the "Hey, I got a name for you" game. Could I interest you potentially instead of Cam Robinson? How about the old Dan Skipper from Detroit?
Sure. This is going to be a boring game because I'm going to say yes to every offensive lineman you bring up. If you say the guy's an offensive lineman, is still breathing, and is able to stand on two feet, I would bring him in here for a workout and consider bringing him in. I am putting, and you know, even dead guys. Remember in Major League, this guy's dead, cross him off the list then?
Sure.
That's the list I have for the offensive line right now. All everybody's right on the list until
step
we cross
step on down,
them.
Bernie.
100% bring everybody here to at least work them out or consider them. But I do think Cam Robinson, you mentioned it, he's bounced around, but it wasn't that long ago he was thought of as a surefire starter in the NFL at left tackle, right? Like, he was one of 32.
Yes. Oh, for sure. And a well-compensated one of 32.
Correct. Well, those days are over for him. I don't want to, you know, maybe give him a little secret that he doesn't know about. Those days are over, the well-compensated. Now you're lucky if you're considered a starter, but can you come to New England and be a starter or at least be insurance? We've touched on this. Forget, you know, Morgan Moses. Do you have any insurance for Will Campbell if Will Campbell isn't ready, gets hurt, you know, is overmatched? What's the did you say Verdarian Lowe? Is that the answer to that question?
Verdarian Lowe and rookie Marcus Bryant.
Oh, another rookie. Great. One rookie after another. Let's just keep rolling rookies out there. So Cam Robinson, at the very least, is an experienced veteran, once highly paid left tackle. So, yeah, he'd be one of the many names I would consider. Trent Brown would not be one of those. I do guess I have to talk about this first segment here. Did you hear the big news, Fitzy?
Are you kidding me? I'm already making plans. I've checked out the online registries. Oh, yeah, I got all verklempt. I took a minute. Of course. Are you kidding me?
Killa
Trav and T-Swift?
Yeah, we have the biggest swizzle engagement ever. Is that fair to say in the modern social media
this
times?
This is the, I would say, probably since Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe in term. Yeah. Because Alex Rodriguez and J-Lo weren't as big, and they didn't even get engaged. They just dated and took gym pictures together.
I mean, you have a guy that some people erroneously call the greatest tight end of all time. He's not, but some people believe that.
That's stupid.
And he's marrying the most famous woman on the planet, the most famous entertainer, the most popular entertainer on the planet. This is a
the most popular
news
person, correct, yes.
So you have the engagement of Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. Yes, Stiz, this is your world.
Can I just tell you guys, Dan and I were in the back studio preparing for the show, gathering sound, gathering information. This was about 1:30, would you say? I don't know, something like that. But we heard yelling coming from the, so we're on the basement floor for, you know, people that don't
obvious
know.
Reasons.
And then above us on the second floor is, you know, stations like Mix, Magic, you know,
big.
Music's big.
The ones
exactly.
that don't have the mice running around.
Wikipedia entry.
All of a sudden, we just started hearing screaming, like women screaming. And I said to Dan, either they're doing like a social media video, or maybe they won the Marconi. I know some of our stations have been nominated. I seriously thought that.
No,
the way
I know.
They were screaming. And the maintenance guy, Mark, I said, Mark, what are they screaming about? He goes, Taylor Swift got engaged.
Well, I will tell you, Brian Frazoco's mother, Mrs. Miner, sent him a text with a show prep idea that we talk about this, not just in relation to its big news, but is the timing a little weird? Like right before the football season, she has an album coming out, continuing this idea that the T-Swift Kelsey alignment is a long con, a business. I don't believe that. I don't
come
believe
on.
That.
This is real. I think all four of us believe this is real love, right, Stanley?
Whoa.
Well, now that they're engaged, I mean, it's kind of hard to fake the funk with that.
People haven't gotten married before for business purposes?
Dan Ball, you have any thoughts?
I think both things can be true.
No, they both can't be true. Are
they
in love? Do they really want to get married? Or is this a business model, business plan, contractual agreement?
I just don't think either of their bank accounts are hurting from this relationship.
No, they are not. But that doesn't they could all it could be two things at once. They can be in love and it helps them star power wise.
I was just told that it couldn't be two things at once 30 seconds ago. So which one is it?
I didn't ask you that. I asked you if is it love or is it a contract?
You just said it can be two things at once.
But you use the reason that they're benefiting from it as proof that it's contract.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think
so. You
I
don't believe it's love.
I mean,
which is fine.
I think that they're both financially sound from this one. Absolutely,
I think they're in love.
Okay.
Wait, are you telling
there
me
you
that
go,
big,
Andy?
Wait, are you guys telling me
I choose
honestly
to
that
believe love still exists?
You guys telling me big sports tobacco is engineering the entirety of this, benefiting her album releases, her international tours, while also dragging a larger female 18 to 34, 25 to 54 audience to the NFL product on television every Sunday on multiple streaming platforms?
Only Dan Ball believes that.
I don't know.
I believe like that as well.
There's
but I
a
think
lot of there's a lot of details that come together on that.
What
one,
if they
Fitzy?
Fell in love? What if they're making like a Hallmark movie? Like they didn't intend to fall in love, but next thing you know, someone put it in the other person's end zone.
Jesus, we can't say that.
What?
Clean it up, Fitzy. It's 2:20. It's not after hours here with Christian Arcand. We did have some nominations. Jay-Z and Beyonce. Is that a similarly large? I don't think so. But
it's pretty big, but not like this.
Yeah. And because this one crosses over and we don't need to go down any like race roads or anything like that. Whoa, everybody guy. Cares about this. I feel like from 10 to 80 people care about this, men and women, because men, you either like her. I think she's more likable since she started showing up at Chiefs games and yelling and screaming and hugging and jumping.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting how all of a sudden her public perception on both gender sides are is on its way up now?
Was she
don't
hurting?
Feed into it, Andy. Don't.
It's interesting.
Was she hurting before then?
I don't think she was quite as popular as she is for the male
was that
group,
showing up
demo.
On the bottom line? Was she not able to make payments on the Watch Hill home down in Rhode Island and the various lifestyles that she was leading? She needed this marriage?
I don't think she needed it, but I'm sure it didn't hurt her album sales and her big tour that she just went on, and I'm just saying.
In the NFL, they estimate it brought nearly $1 billion in brand value and publicity to the NFL.
Phew, they How can avoid that? Extinction. They were actually going to go out of business. UFL was going to pass them up as the
Who couldn't
favorite.
Use $1 billion?
Good Lord, you people
are ridiculous. You get a lot of money, and like at one point, once you'd think like, "Oh, I have enough money now." No, once you get more money, you want more money.
We did have the 203 say Belichick and Jordan, LMAO, not quite as big.
That will shake the ground if that
not
announcement.
Like this.
No, not like this, obviously, but that will shake the ground, especially here in New England.
Taylor Swift shakes the ground by anything she does. Like if she wears a piece of clothing that changes fashion, if she says a word, like she is such a packaged and managed image and everything that goes into it. She's the biggest star on the planet. She just is.
But she does it herself too. That's the thing. She's not like a K-pop band or something, or like a boy band that is a managed product. She's an actual songwriter. She's a true like artist. I know it's crazy to say that in the day and age of AI and synthesized nonsense, but like I kind of admire her for that.
Now
I
wish I believed Dan Ball's side because Taylor Swift is such a part of her own image and packaging. To see her go to some meeting with the NFL and be like, "I got this idea, Travis Kelce and I start dating."
And then, and she like has this like this whole like easel where she's putting like this, you'll make a billion, he'll make this, he's gonna have a podcast that I'll go on that'll get 1.3 billion views and all like that. I would love to lean into. I just don't buy it. I think whatever happened, they got to know each other, and
that's how they met, I believe, right? Travis went to one of her concerts,
her off. I believe the original story is, didn't he make her bracelets? That's a thing with her. He wanted to give her a bracelet or something or a meet and greet, and she blew him off. And that's kind of how the relationship, quote unquote, started.
Left him wanting more.
Smart by her.
Yeah, that's a good play.
Imagine him, though, like thinking, yeah, I'll shoot my shot. What's the worst? And then like, oh, wait, you said yes, we can go out? Oh, you said yes to a second date. You said, do you want to come to Brazil with me? And now you're marrying into the greatest musical empire of our generation. Yes, Stiz.
Yeah, you were right. Travis attended her Eras Tour stop at Arrowhead Stadium in July of 23. He attempted to give her a friendship bracelet with his phone number. However, he was unable to connect with her directly.
Yeah, because his people told her people and they laughed and walked away and didn't connect him. But hey, these two crazy kids found love, and that's what I'm going to choose to believe.
We love love, right, guys?
Evil world. If we're going to bitch about Twitter and negativity, can't we embrace the love that's been found by this cute couple? Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, engaged to be married. I learned from Adam Schefter's Twitter account, but they put it on social media first. It is cut down day in the National Football League. We will continue to bring you all the updates, not just of what the Patriots are doing, but what other teams are doing, talent that may be available on the trade market or the waiver wire. We also need to talk about the Boston Red Sox because they got the job done last night. I love it, but if I'm going to pick nits, as we do in this business, there is one little thing I don't love about last night's one-run victory. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons, but first, Dan Ball from the Dan Ball Deadline Trade Desk has what's trending.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, brought to you by Mario's Roofing. We won't soak you to keep you warm and dry. The Red Sox beat the Baltimore Orioles on the road last night. The final was 4-3. Richard Fitz picked up the win in relief of opener Brennan Bernardino. Fitz left the game with right bicep tightness. He'll be reevaluated today, but no MRI has been scheduled as of yet. Game 2 of that series is tonight, first pitch at 6:35. Lucas Giolito will start against Kyle Bradish, who is making his return from Tommy John surgery this evening. And you can listen to the game on WEEI FM 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's Go Shopping, Get Reward. MassMutual pregame show with Christian Arkin is tonight at 5:35, and Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the series. The NFL cutdown deadline is today at 4 p.m. The Patriots have been busy today. Their cuts include lineman Demontre Jacobs, corner Miles Battle, kicker Parker Romo, corner Brandon Crosley, receiver John Giles, safety Marcus Epps, defensive tackle David Olajiga, as well as lineman Mekhi Butler, center Alec Lindstrom, linebacker Cam Riley, running back Jamichael Hasty, and defensive end Truman Jones. Again, the cutdown deadline for the Pats and the rest of the NFL is at 4 p.m. today. From around the league earlier today, the Giants cut quarterback Tommy DeVito, the Browns cut wide receiver Deontay Johnson, the Packers cut both wide receiver Mecole Hardman and linebacker Isaiah Simmons, and the Texans are releasing fullback Jakob Johnson. And new this afternoon, Kansas City Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are now officially engaged. Homeowners choose Mario's Roofing because they're fair, honest, and provide quality services. Call Mario's Roofing today for a free estimate at 781-344-2420. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzie-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Jaron drives one high into center field. Kowser back at the warning track at the wall. It is out of here! It's a bomb to straightaway center. And it's high in the air into shallow left field. Should do it. Duran fittingly is underneath it. He's there to make the play. Ball game over. Duran's three-run homer. The Sox win the opener in Baltimore. And you can't take your eyes off JD.
That was Will Fleming's call last night. 4-3 win for your Boston Red Sox. A leadoff home run for Roman Anthony. Huh. Little power surge here, Fitzy. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I kind of love it. I'm glad everybody, you know, what's probably happened is that people on the team heard the stellar advice that I gave to Roman Anthony for his swing path. And of course, now other people have followed suit and they're knocking dingers and winning games. It's only natural. And it's the least I could contribute to the team. That and the fact that chicks dig the long ball. So Pat's actually having a little power and pop in there. Awesome. Also, we need to make a lot more of what's going on in the back end of the Red Sox bullpen. Yeah.
Thanks, Fitzy.
Welcome, Roman. Least I could do, bud. Thank you. We got to talk about, the opener, Fitz injury, not great. The fact now that basically Whitlock and Chapman are nails whenever you get to them, like, what have they given up? They're each averaging half a run or less over their last 20-something appearances. This is insane.
Well, I think we might need to expand it, though, and I'll bring Dan Ball in here because I'm sure he might have some statisticals to back some of this up, but Matt Zoll, folks, the guy we didn't really like from the Cards, an overpaid middle reliever at the trade deadline, as he had two scoreless innings last night, and I feel like I have growing confidence in what he brings to the table, Dan Ball.
Yeah, very quietly in 9 outings as a member of the Red Sox, 10 and a third innings, 5 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts. That's an 0.87 ERA.
That's
He's
good,
been
right?
Incredible.
Yeah, no, yeah. And I'm not saying that's who he is, like, oh, if they get to the postseason, now you only have to pitch 6 innings because you have boom, 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 Matt's, Whitlock, and Chapman, but I don't know. I feel pretty good about what he's been bringing to the table over this short sample size. So,
and I think they've used him extremely well. Like,
yeah.
He hasn't been in, the only time he's really been in a high leverage situation was that Sunday against the Marlins where it didn't go very well. But other than that, when he's come in 6th or 7th inning, kind of middle relief, he's been untouchable, legitimately untouchable, because the only run he gave up was against the Marlins.
And a multiple inning guy. And he's got a little something. There's a little swagger growing. You watched him last night. He threw a fastball that was just inside off the plate, and like, he wanted it. He wanted strike 3, and he had a little like body language, and he comes back and he throws another one and gets the call, and he's got a little, I'm not going to say he's Dustin May or even Chapman, whatever. There's a little developing swagger or confidence in him in his role.
Well, he's a big market guy. He came from the Mets, so he knows exactly what it's like to pitch in higher pressure situations like that. So I think he was kind of raised in those high intensity situations.
So Fitzy, let's talk about the offense here. So you get the home run from Roman Anthony, which Dan Ball tells me at 21 years and 104 days, he's the youngest player in Red Sox history with a leadoff home run. He surpassed, on August 1st, 1939, Bobby Doerr, 21 years, 116.
The great Bobby Doerr, one of the teammates.
Yeah. So Roman Anthony continuing to align himself with, I don't know, Ted Williams, Hall of Famers, all-time greats, whether they be Red Sox.
Right.
Yeah, like seems like he's putting right. a nice little packet of notes together for himself. And then you get the 3-run home run by Jarren Duran, which...
Good things happen when that kid goes yard, Andy.
So that's what I wanted to talk about. My one concern last night is I don't think this team is a home run hitting team. I've believed that all along. I think they're a doubles to doubles team. It'll help you with the doubles for diabetes campaign. I think that is how they should play baseball. And we've talked about it. It seems like at times they fall in love with the idea of the home run, and they're not really built for that. And so it's great. You hit a couple home runs to win a game. You certainly don't want to lose to the Orioles. I'm not saying I want to lose. I just wonder, is this one of those things where it feeds into what could be detrimental to their long-term development as a lineup and as players? That's my only question.
They should not adjust team-wide or team-wise to all trying to be home run hitters. No. No, just a couple folks every now and again trying to crank a few more out because the team's going to need it because, like we discussed yesterday, until and if you call up Kyle Harrison, Peyton Tolley, the Piglet, or both, you don't know who your 4 and 5 starters are going to be, so there's a greater likelihood you are going to need some more dingers in those games. But otherwise, no, you should stick with the approach that's gotten you where you are, which is, what, the 3rd best record in baseball since the Rafael Devers trade? Sneaky great stat. 36 and 24 over their last 60. That'll do.
Yeah, but I think they got there by hitting doubles. I think that 10-game winning streak, like, they're a doubles team, and you see, I wonder, because we do talk a lot about they're a young team, they're an inconsistent team. Mentally, they are finding themselves. Other like than a Bregman or a Story, they're younger. So Dan Ball.
Since the day after the Devers trade, kind of to your point, they're 21st in the league in home runs hit with 68. Doesn't that feel a bit more akin to what their roster
absolutely
is. Not bottom of the league, but certainly not upper top 10, that kind of thing.
And we get a guy like Rafaela, who's been jumping on bad pitches lately, seemingly trying to pull the ball, trying to crush the ball. Like, I just think when they're at their best, and even some of the other guys can get in it, you know my Yoshida take. I don't love Yoshida, but can he advance a runner? Can he push a guy? I don't even know if he can do that anymore, if I'm being honest. I was trying to talk myself into that. But they're a doubles baseball team, and Fitzy, as much as you say it, you know, like they're going to potentially not have a fourth or a fifth starter, and they're going to have to score some runs to win those back end of the rotation games. There's no rule that says the runs have to come by home run. You can go double to double. Hit two doubles, and that's a run, right?
But every now and again, you may need to I'm not talking about, like, what did the Yankees hit 9 in one game and 14 in two games
prior to
the series against... Yeah, that's what they do.
It's also why they lose when they don't do it. Right. They fall in love.
But every now and again, Bregman, Story, Duran, Roman, Abreu, even Narvaez. A little extra pop goes a long way, especially in clutch moments. Just saying.
You are, without Abreu, your best player, or theoretically one of your best power hitters right now. The other thing that I've noticed, and I don't know if this is going to translate or not, this guy's been pretty good since he got here in a limited role, Nathaniel Lowe, but every time I hear Will Fleming, he's talking about the show he puts on in batting practice. Apparently, Nathaniel Lowe is one of those, like, natural power. If you see him take BP, he wows you. I guess he hit the warehouse down in Baltimore yesterday, which is famous, infamous Ken Griffey Jr. home run derby down there. Anybody that's been there, it's a pretty long ways away. Not too many people have the power to hit the warehouse out there in right field. So maybe he is an additional pop bat. What's he got? 17 home runs. He had 16, I think, with Washington. Obviously had the one here. So maybe he's a guy that adds a little pop to your lineup. I just don't want other guys trying to be the guys that add pop to the lineup. I feel like this team is better built a little bit playing sort of not situational baseball, because I'm not talking about bunting and doing the little things, small ball. Just play to Fenway Park. Play to your athleticism. Play to the gaps.
You're a station-to-station team. You're a contact team. You're a smart baseball team.
Sometimes they're a contact team. Last night was actually one of their counter examples where they struck out 11 times, double-digit strikeouts, but still won the game, a one-run baseball game. So
they're not a very good team when they strike out 10 or more times.
Nope. So it was good to get the win last night in that situation. But you said probably the two stories of the night may have been Richard Fitz, and I don't believe we have any tangible updates other than what we had last night, that it's a bicep, which I'm always a little dubious when, it's a bicep. We'll go with bicep first before we tell you the real story later.
That's kind of never great.
Yeah, no, it's anything that has to do with your pitching arm is not great in this situation when they are losing arms left and right or choosing to move on from arms left and right. 617-779-7937. If I had a dollar for every time the subject line said this, Andy's take is ridiculous. Yeah. Do tell us, Alex, what's up?
Yeah, I just don't get what you guys are talking about. It seems like you took the team stats and said, like, oh, the Red Sox are leading the league in doubles. They're a doubles team. They're in half the top half of the league in home runs. All season long, if you've been watching, all the broadcast says is they lead the league in three-run homers with guys on base.
So you think they're a power team.
I mean, I don't get your point. They're going to go to the playoffs, and they're going to have opportunities to hit home runs. No one's stepping up the plate and saying, I want to hit a home run here.
Oh, they absolutely do it. I mean, if you listen, they talk about it. Will Middlebrooks has talked about this all year, that they fell in love with hitting home runs early in the season, that they were trying to hit three-run homers. Now, maybe Will Middlebrooks doesn't know what he's talking about. That's a possibility. You can take that up with Will Middlebrooks, Alex.
I just don't see them trying to hit home runs. The team has been doing great since the All-Star break, and I don't see them trying to hit home runs.
So Dan Ball just gave us the stat that since they moved on from Rafi Devers, they're 21st in home runs, and that's their best stint of baseball. Fitzy, did you say third best record in baseball?
Third best record at 36-24.
Interesting. How do you come to grips with those stats, Alex?
I don't know that stat. That is an interesting stat. 21 in home runs. I mean, I'll take that. But
12th overall right now.
Home run hitting team, just because of where they fall in that stat, that it's ridiculous. The guys have pop, and they'll be able to hit it. This is a clutch team, and they have been pretty much all season long. I think since the All-Star break, they've been a clutch team.
Thanks for the call, Alex. Didn't mean to bring information to the table with you calling my take ridiculous. Thank you, Dan Ball, for your information that I had to take to that battle that I was in. Did anybody say it? So, again, Fitzy, not to crap on you or take this fight in your direction that I am having with Alex, but you said, you know, they're going to need to score runs, so having some pop is good. He just said, Alex said something to the effect, they're a clutch team. Are you only clutch if you hit home runs? Like, you can't be doubles clutch? You can't be contact clutch?
You can be singles clutch, triples clutch. You can be walk clutch.
Right. Like, runners in scoring position has been an issue for them. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people believe some of that is...
bases loaded back-to-back-to-back has also been an issue.
Yeah, not great. Not great, so much so that Lou Maloney was making fun of it before Roman Anthony went yard. But Dan Ball, do you have to hit a home run to be clutch? Is that how that works?
My understanding is no, but here's what I do know. So before the Rafael Devers trade, which is just our line of demarcation in the conversation, because that's kind of when they
found
it.
What does Bradfoe call it? It's a...
inflection point?
No. He did like the AD, the AD, Jesus Christ, AD, B, whatever.
Before Devers, after Devers.
Yeah.
BD, AD. Yeah. So BD, they were ninth in home runs, but third in strikeouts. So a lot of all or nothing result
from
that. Yeah,
swinging for the fences.
Now, since the trade, they are 21st in home runs, but they're 21st in strikeouts.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So their home runs went down, but so did their strikeouts. And what went up?
The doubles, which they lead Major League Baseball in by 9.
But more importantly than that, what also went up?
The wins.
Wins, Dub. You ever see Jameis Winston when he's eating Dubs?
Yeah, Jackson Dart fed him one on the sideline.
Yeah, that was a little awkward.
That was
for
epic.
My liking.
Yeah, that was absolutely epic.
I heard in my head Stiz playing, oh, this is awkward, whatever, when they were doing that. That was a little awkward in my mind. But Alex, I appreciate the call. I may be way off base, but I think the Red Sox are better off when they're not counting on the home run. That's old school Red Sox. Oh, I'll put it over the Green Monster. No, it's okay if you hit the Green Monster and then it bounces and you slide into second and do your airplane celebration. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, we do need to talk about the shortstop. And that's not yet Marcelo Meyer because he's hurt. And therefore, Trevor Story is continuing to take that job. He's having his healthiest season yet at the age of 32. But he could also opt out of his contract. Does Trevor Story want to be here long-term? Do you want Trevor Story to be the long-term shortstop? 617-779-7937. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons.
With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
It's very gratifying. You know, like, I'm very happy for him. He worked so hard in the offseason to get to this point, to be able to post and play at this level. You know, he had a tough month of May, and he turned it around. He's one of the leaders of the team on and off the field, but he's playing elite baseball right now.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora talking about his shortstop, Trevor Story, who over the weekend, I don't know if everybody noticed, joined the 2020 club for the season, 20 home runs, 20 steals.
I don't think he's been thrown out once, by the way.
I know he was 18 of 18, so I believe he is still a perfect 20 of 20, very much so, although not as impressive as Josh Naylor. We'll talk about him later. But Trevor Story became just the third shortstop to reach the 2020 plateau, joining Nomar and John Valentin in the 90s. He also became the oldest Red Sox player to become a 2020 player. And Trevor Story, healthy, which is, you know, not something he's been able to say very often throughout the course of his Red Sox tenure. He has an interesting situation. We focus a lot on, will Alex Bregman opt out of his contract? Well, Trevor Story can opt out of the final 2 years of his contract that are scheduled to pay him $50 million. Now, the Red Sox can actually kind of override that opt-out by opting into a third year at $25 million, making it a three-year $75 million deal, or they can pay a buyout and let him hit free agency. Trevor Story said to the Globe, to Tim Healy, "It's not even on my mind, to be honest with you. I've been so locked in on the daily process and just what it takes to win each night. That's where all the effort and all the energy is going. Those things are there for a reason, but those things are dealt with in the offseason. I signed here to play here long term. We still have a lot of work to do. I'm happy to do that." Are you concerned? Do you think he's going to opt out? Where do you come down on this, Fitzgerald?
No, I think that would be nuts for him to opt out. That's really good money to walk away from for somebody who is, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, currently in the midst of playing his first healthy season for the Red Sox since signing that whopper of a 6-year deal a couple of years back.
And ironically, the guy who is his in-house replacement, I guess, is injured for the third
remainder
straight
of the
year?
Season.
Yeah, but also the third straight year in his young career.
Oh, yeah, he fragile as well.
So, you know, the health is a factor for Marcelo Meyer as well as Story. I would also think, now I know he considers himself a shortstop. The Red Sox don't really have a second baseman.
I was just going to say, like, can I interest you? And there's a beautiful spot of land right over here. The throw to first is a little shorter.
Yep, and his arm is not what it once was. You see, he's good. I want to be clear. He's had a good season on defense and at the plate.
Less apt to get hurt with the range issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, long term, and if you have an infield, if you can get Marcelo Meyer healthy, because we've seen him play all three positions, third, short, and second, dude is smooth. And if you have Bregman at third, Meyer at short, mm-hmm. Story at second, and TBD at first base. We'll leave
big fan of TBD.
Leave that to a later discussion. That's a pretty good defensive infield. Yeah. And based on this year, it's also a pretty good offensive infield. And the bigger thing for me is, if I'm Trevor Story, all I'm really trying to angle for is that $25 million third year. Basically, make them think you might opt out, but then just give me the 25. We got 3 and 75, because he knows he could be hurt again like this, and then all of a sudden he's on the open market. What's his market going to be? I don't think it's going to be $25 million a year for an off-injured shortstop at the age of 33.
Yeah, I hope he also doesn't see what Bregman did and go, hey, I can do that. I can go get three for $1.20 someplace, instruct a couple of youngins, buy some suits, bring the vibes on the spring training road trips, and then just go be the guy everybody listens to. If he were to go to, like, let's say, contacts the Tigers or something and just gauges their interest in a veteran infielder to show some youngsters the way. Okay, that's cool, but I don't think AJ Hinch and those guys have the same connection to you that they had to Bregman, so I don't know what their interest would necessarily be. There are other teams like the Dodgers or the Mets, or even maybe, I don't know, not the Phillies, because they've got their own shortstop locked in for another 8 years, but he makes the most sense where he is, unless the Yankees want to come and poach him for some reason. He should stay where he is. The great move is for all sides to just go, you know what? Great year last year. Thanks for staying healthy. We're going to invest in you. Here's the extra year. He says, you know what? I love it here. And the Red Sox stay relevant and competitive for the next 3 years.
Also, I'd like to see these guys try to opt out after a nice little postseason run. They get their first flavor of Fenway in the postseason.
I hate these effing opt-outs. I got to be honest. I know why they're there. I hate these opt-outs.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's hard to hate something that's just kind of part of the business. And I get where you're at.
I'm just saying.
But
it creates unnecessary anxiety.
Yeah, but if you were a player, you'd like the opt-out.
Well, sure, I'm not. About as far from it.
Not a communist, I'm a capitalist.
Ask the guys in the Berkshires who I played softball with last Sunday what kind of shortstop I am.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on the aging left side of the Red Sox infield that's having a very good year, but both have opt-outs at the end of the year. I'm with Trevor Story. How about we deal with that after the season? How about we deal with that Bregman and Story after a nice little playoff run? Maybe go, I'm not going to get greedy, let's go ALCS. Let's go to the ALCS and then see how you feel about extending your career in Boston. 617-779-7937 if you want to react to that. Coming up on our three-point stances, I'm going to tell you who I believe is the most enjoyable member of the Boston Red Sox to watch right now. And it may surprise you. I know it surprises me that I'm about to say this. That's my three-point stance. It's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.